Today is December 10, 1986. This is Edith Milman interviewing Mrs. Lillian Wishniewski. Mrs. Wishniewski, can you tell me where you were born?
I was born in Poland in a town called Sosnowiec in 1929 in December.
Can you tell me something about your pre-war home life?
Well, from what I remember, my pre-war home life, it was very good. My parents were very comfortable. I was an only child. My mother was a professional. She played the piano, and we owned a cigarette factory, and my grandparents owned the stocking factory, and my other grandparents owned the lumber yard. So I was raised, like you would say, as a wealthy child, which my parents were wealthy. And I had a governess, and I was an only child. I didn't go to a private school, I went to public school, and I had a good education up to the fourth grade because the system in Poland was very good and our educational system was advanced. So whatever I learned up to fourth grade was pretty good. That's what I remember.
What religious observances do you remember, if any?
Well, my parents were Jewish. Both of my grandparents, my one set of parents on my father's side was very religious. My parents were not very religious, but they kept holidays because in Europe, out of respect for your elders, people did everything to, you know, to please them, and my mother and father followed all the holidays, so I learned as much as I possibly could about Judaism, and I had to go to synagogue, and traditions were kept, and Pesach, holidays, we changed the dishes, and Yom Kippur, I had to go to synagogue for the holiday, and Sukkot.
So I remember. You kept the kosher house?
Yes, we kept the kosher house.
Mrs. Wishniewski, how old were you when the war broke out?
I was 9 years old when the war broke out in September
4, 1939. Were you aware of any anti-Semitism before the war?
Very little, very little. I was very young and I was not aware of it. The only time I was a little uncomfortable, the school that I went to was more or less a Catholic type of a school because most of the Polish people were Catholics. I had to leave the class when they had religion, and they had religion almost every day. And then we had our own small group of Jewish children. I had to go to another room and learn about Judaism. That's the only time I felt the difference, that I was different. But otherwise, I didn't feel any anti-Semitism.
When the war broke out, how and when did it first involve your town?
My town happens to be very close to the German border. When the war broke out, I think a week later, the Germans entered Sosnowiec. We really didn't have too much time to think about it, because before you turn around, the Germans were right there in Sosnowiec. They took over instantly.
Was a ghetto established in Sosnowiec?
Yes, but not right away.
When were you sent to a ghetto, and could you describe it?
At first, the way they formed the ghetto was they made different families from different areas live in the neighborhood where I lived, and they made Jewish families come over from Germany, and they had to move in with families in Poland. So our apartment, which had maybe about 4 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, had to accommodate a German family, and then a Jewish family from Germany that was sent to Poland, and then my grandparents on my father's side had to leave home whatever apartment that they were living in at the time, they had to come and live with us too. So we wound up living three families in one apartment. That was around 1941 or so.
How about food and clothing? And did your father still go to work?
Well, the cigarette factory was confiscated by the Nazis, and my father had to run it. So my father had to work every day for the Germans, and he ran the factory. And at first, I didn't feel the pinch about food or money because I was very young, and I wasn't even a big eater, so I really didn't care about the food. But I know, I found out later that my parents had money and jewelry and valuables that they traded in for food.
Were you able to go to school?
No, I could not go to public school anymore. As soon as the Germans came in, they made the Jewish people leave public schools. My father got a private tutor for me, and there were several other Jewish children, and we were going to this man's house every day. And
okay, tell me more about the school. How many children
there were about
each teacher?
We just had one teacher. This Jewish man was willing to teach us in his home, which was considered illegal. The Germans didn't know, supposedly, that we were going to school somewhere, and I was getting my education that way for a while. It was about eight of us.
Do you remember of any punishment for going to school, if any of your friends were punished for going to these secret classes?
No, because nobody knew about it. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I know, I think I went to school for about a year or so like that. Maybe a little longer. The next thing I know, I wasn't allowed to go to school anymore. And from what I understand, the Germans found out about it, and they closed the school. They made the man, they wouldn't let him teach anybody anymore. And I don't know if they punished him or not, but I wasn't punished. I just wasn't going anymore.
Could you tell me if the ghetto was surrounded by a wall? How was it separated from the rest of the town?
Later on, they made us move to another area, but that part of the city was the ghetto surrounded by a wall, and they had guards outside of the wall.
Could people still leave and go to work, or did they have to work in the ghetto?
No, I think most people still went out to work if they were fortunate enough and they could still have something to do, but they had to be back within a certain time.
Do you remember what kind of documents were distributed in the ghetto? Any identification cards or cards for labor?
Everybody had to wear the Jewish armband from the start when the Nazis came in. I think everybody had an identification card and probably a labor card. Because, as I said, I was so young, but I don't remember, but I think my father had a labor card and he had to go to work every day to run the factory that was once ours, and he had to show his card every day.
Were there any deportations from the ghetto?
They started deportations from the ghetto gradually. The whole thing was done very gradually, very quietly. People would talk about, this one disappeared, and they said he went to a labor camp. He didn't come back, and next thing you heard, somebody else disappeared, went to a labor camp, didn't come back. People really didn't know enough about where these people were being sent to right away. This was a gradual thing. It's like they were doing it in a sneaky way, telling the people, the Jewish people, that they were taking certain members of the families and sending them to labor camps, and then they'll come home.
Were you aware of any special children actions where they would get children and send them away?
Not right away, no. That didn't happen till the end. As far as, from what I saw, I didn't see any children sent away till around the time when I went to Auschwitz.
How long were you in the ghetto in Sosnowiez?
Maybe about About a year and a half.
And where did you go from there? And
then we went to, they made us move to another apartment, which was in Shrodula ghetto. And there too, we had to live with my grandparents on my father's side. They lived with us. But we didn't have an apartment there. There we just had one big room. And it was about eight of us in one big room. And that's how we had to live.
How far was Shrodula from Sosnovyets? Was it?
It wasn't far. It was like a suburb, you would say, the outskirts of Sosnovyets. And Sosnovyets was maybe the fourth or fifth big city in Poland, so it couldn't have been that large of a town, and it wasn't that far away from Sosnovyets.
Mm-hmm. Were the conditions worse in Shrodula?
Yes, the conditions were much worse in Shrodula.
Can you describe it a little bit?
Well, first of all, as I said, about eight of us had to sleep in one room. The beds were pushed together, and then we put a sheet between beds because I had an aunt and uncle that were married, and I had an old grandparents, and there wasn't any privacy, and I had a single uncle who was about 28 years old, and I was there with my father, and there was another aunt and uncle that lived with us. So the conditions were not good, and it was hard to get food by then. And my father didn't go to work anymore. They took they confiscated our factory, mm-hmm. and things were starting to get really bad.
Where was your mother at the time?
My mother went to another little town. She got false papers made for herself as a Christian, and Christian families were hiding her. She went to Warsaw. And she was going to send for me and for my father later. She was getting papers ready to send for us. And she had money and jewelry with her, and that's how she survived in the Warsaw ghetto at the time. Mm-hmm. But she never got a chance to bring my father and me over to the Warsaw ghetto.
Well, then she stayed in the Warsaw ghetto,
She never came back, no. Mm-hmm. She couldn't come back then. It was they wouldn't let her. She had to stay there in hiding.
When and where were you sent from Shrodula?
From Shrodula, they made us move to another apartment in Shrodula. It was even a smaller place, a smaller room. By that time, my two aunts and uncles disappeared. I think they were taken into a camp, and I didn't even realize it, what was happening. They were just gone. And we had to live in one little room and another little apartment with a strange family, and I remember sleeping in bed with my father because there was no room, and things were very, very bad then. That was the last apartment that I remember being in till we went into hiding.
Could you tell me a little bit about hiding, where you were hiding?
Well, when we were in this little apartment, the Nazis came in the middle of the night and took my father out. And the Nazis came in the middle of the night and took my father out. And my grandmother got on her knees and she practically kissed the German's boots and pleaded with him, "Don't take my son, don't take my son. Take me, take me." And I think I was just standing there in shock because I really didn't know what was going on. I didn't understand. The full meaning didn't hit me because I was so young. And, you know, I really had no idea what they were going to do to him. But I just had a feeling that I'll never see him again. And they wouldn't listen to my grandmother. And they took my father with them. And naturally, I never saw him again.
And you stayed in Shrodula with your grandparents?
Yes, I stayed there with my grandparents, and they had a son who was my uncle, who was deaf, who was a mute. So it was the four of us. And then next thing I remember, while we were there, the other family and my grandparents made a hideout in a cellar underneath the cellar. They made it with boards, I think, where you didn't even know when you went down the cellar that there was another entrance. And we were hiding there for quite a while. And there was another family there. I think there was a rabbi and his wife. They were an older couple, and there was a child there besides. And every night my grandfather used to go outside and scrounge around for some food, wherever he could get food. And this lasted for a few weeks. And the next thing I remember, it was broad daylight, so I guess it had to be in the morning sometimes. The Nazis found us. They had German police dogs. And the Polish people helped them find us, because the Polish people knew that we were hiding. And they opened up the trap door to the basement, to the hiding place, and they dragged us out and lined us up in the middle of the yard. And then they dragged the rabbi by the beard and made him chant in Hebrew. And they shot my grandparents, and they shot my uncle, and they shoved me on the wagon and sent me to another, like a ghetto. But it was not a ghetto, it was just a, looked like a great big yard with a couple houses with barbed wires and bars in the windows. We just stayed there for a while.
And with whom did you stay there? Did you say that you shot your grandparents?
They shot my grandparents.
Were you there with other children?
You
were saying they took you to a yard?
Like a little camp, yes. It was a yard with houses, with, not houses, it was like a prison. There wasn't any beds inside or anything. It was a bare cement floor, and we just sat there and waited for our fate. And from there, we were there a few weeks. I guess they threw us food, whatever it was. And from there, they send us to Auschwitz on cattle trains.
Can you describe it a little bit?
Yeah, I can describe it. We got on the cattle trains, and people were screaming and carrying on, and some people jumped off the train. And we had to stay on the train for, I think it was a couple of days, because I don't remember how long of a ride it was. And we just had to stay there, and if anybody had to go to the bathroom, they just had to go on the train. Some people passed out, and that was the ride to Auschwitz, and the Nazis were on the train with machine guns and watched us. And when we got off at Auschwitz, I remember seeing those gates and bleak barracks, and they lined us up outside, and they formed lines for, some people went to the left, and some people went to the right. The ones to the left went probably to the gas chamber immediately, and the ones to the right, they sent us to the labor camp. And I was one of them that I was one of the lucky ones they sent to the camp.
How old were you at that time? That was when?
I was older. About 12 and a half.
Now, could you tell me, were you with other children in the camp, or were you with adults?
I was with adults. There wasn't any children in my camp. I was one of the youngest children in my camp. From what I understand, they had a camp for children, a special one. They did not send me there, even though I was 12 years old. I looked younger. I was little and skinny. I did not look my age, but for some reason, they did not send me to the children's camp. From what I understand, later on, the children's camp was totally destroyed and the children all died. They just sent me to the labor camp as if I was older.
Did you have to join a labor battalion? What kind of work did you have to do, if any?
I had to do all kinds of work. I had to dig ditches, and I had to walk in all kinds of cold weather with wooden clodhopper shoes that we had to wear and the prison uniforms from about 5-6 o'clock in the morning and carry bricks from one spot to another. We had to dig ditches. I worked in an ammunition factory making bullets, and I worked in another factory where we sewed patches and buttons for soldiers' uniforms.
Do you recall if you were sick in the camp? Did you receive any kind of medical treatment?
I was sick in the camp. I didn't receive any medical treatment because my illness was a kidney disease that I had when, before I entered the camp. I had a nephrosis or nephritis. I used to swell up all the time, and I had to be on a special diet before the war, and I had to get a lot of rest. I was a sickly child. So in the camp, since I had to be on a special diet, since they didn't feed me very much, it actually helped my diet. But I was very weak. I was very tired.
How long were you in Auschwitz?
From 12 and a half, from the time I was 12 and a half till I was 14, till I was about 14 or so, a little past 14.
During that time, were you aware of any underground movement?
No, I was so young. I didn't realize that was going on.
Did you know of anybody who escaped?
Yes.
Who escaped?
I have a cousin that escaped, but I don't know how he escaped. Leon, mm-hmm. I think he was in Auschwitz. He lives in Oklahoma now. He escaped Auschwitz, and he paraded as a German soldier. I don't know how he got out.
But did you know that he was in Auschwitz at the same time?
No,
you didn't,
we were all separated.
Did you have contact with any of your friends or some relatives?
One. She was my mother's best girlfriend. Her name was Anja Spiegelman. She was with me in the camp most of the time. And she used to share, every time she got a piece of bread or extra food, she used to share it with me. Because her husband was in the men's camp, and sometimes he could smuggle some food over to her. So whenever she had something, whenever I was with her, she shared it with me.
And that's beautiful. Where were you sent from Auschwitz?
From Auschwitz, they sent me to a camp called Ravensburg. We had this march. We had to march in snow and ice, sleep from Auschwitz for a couple of days. And then we got on cattle train and they took us to Ravensburg because this was in 1944 and the Russians were coming close to Auschwitz. So the Germans sent us into Germany. And that's when I went to Ravensburg.
So first you had to march and then...
First we had to march and then they put us on cattle trains.
Now, could you describe Ravensburg or what happened when you arrived there?
Well, we arrived there. I remember we had to, the first day when we arrived there, we had to sleep on the ground because they didn't know where to put us because it was a transport from Auschwitz. They probably didn't expect it. Maybe they just weren't ready to receive prisoners from another camp. And they made us sleep on the ground for a couple of nights. And it was winter. It was cold and freezing. And then they assigned us to barracks. And the barracks were very similar to what Auschwitz was like. And they sent us out in the fields to dig ditches again and do all kinds of labor, outdoor labor in Ravensburg. I didn't do any indoor labor there at all. And they also had gas chambers in Ravensburg. And they sent us to take showers quite often. We were always worried that the showers would wind up being gas.
Did you know about the showers being gas?
I knew about it in Auschwitz once I got there because they made us take showers every few days, get undressed and give them our uniforms that we wore, the blue and white striped uniforms. And I don't know if they gave us back the same ones or new ones. They all look dirty. They all look the same. But they used to make us get undressed. And we never knew if we'd get into the shower, if it would be water, or if it would be gas. So we knew about the gas. Because my barrack was right across the street from the gas chamber. And I saw the smoke every day.
So you knew
what was going on? I saw the trains coming in with people all the time. And I heard the screaming of the people dying every day. And I'm doing okay. Yeah.
Mrs. Wisniewski is crying, so we're going to proceed slowly.
Okay.
Mrs. Wisniewski, in Ravensbrück, Do you say that there were also gas chambers?
Yes, they had gas chambers in Robinsburg. But they didn't send us for body inspection as often as they did in Auschwitz, because I think that they knew there were that the war was almost over, and maybe Hitler was getting a little panicky and getting a little negligent about examining us. But we also knew that if the war would be over, everybody would die first, because he didn't want any survivors. We knew that.
What do you mean by body inspection?
Body inspection, I mean they used to make us get undressed all the time and line us up. Every time it happened, maybe 2-3 times a week. And anybody that had any deterioration marks on their bodies from starvation would go to the gas chamber. If anybody had a blemish on their body from, and starvation will do that. You can get blotches all over your body or swell up from starvation. Those people went right to the gas chamber.
Who was doing the inspecting?
German officers.
You stayed in Ravensbrück till what time?
Till March of 1945.
And then you were liberated, right?
No. I was in exchange of prisoners. I was sent to Sweden before the war was over. President Roosevelt made a pact with Hitler to exchange 200 of German soldiers for some prisoners from Ravensbrück. And they took 200 prisoners from Ravensbrück and sent us to Sweden. They sent them to Sweden. I was one of the exchange, prisoner exchange.
How did they select the people?
I don't know how they selected, but one time in the middle of the night, I was laying in my barrack, and they called out my number. We all had numbers. We were not names. And when they called out my number, and they said, line up outside, they never told you anything. I thought, this was it. This is the end. I'm going to die now. So I stood outside, and a whole bunch of people came from different barracks, and they lined us up like soldiers. And they marched us over to another barrack, an empty one, and they made us sit there on the ground with cement floor and nothing else. And we just sat there for a day or so. We didn't know what was happening. And next thing I know, we thought we were going to die, that from there we're going to the gas chamber. And the next thing I know, they came in like 2 days later or so. I think I lost track of time for this whole thing. They brought us food, a package of food. Everybody got a care package of Red Cross food, and I thought to myself that they're going to feed us now so we could go to the gas chamber, not realizing what was happening. So I opened my package and I ate, because I thought, if I'm going to die, let me eat a piece of chocolate first. And then they made us walk out the gate, and as we were walking out the gate, we had our numbers sewn on our uniforms. Besides the ones that we had tattooed, it was the same number sewn on the outside of our sleeve. They ripped the numbers off. I'll never forget that. And everybody walked out the gate with a package of food, and the numbers were ripped off. So I thought, for sure, this is it. I'll be going to the gas chamber. And they had Red Cross trucks outside, Danish Red Cross trucks. And they told us to get on the trucks. So a lot of women started to scream, and they wouldn't get on the trucks. They said, it's a trick. It's a trick. We're going to the gas chamber. And I got on the truck, and I ate my chocolates or whatever I could lay my hands on in my package. And the truck drivers kept saying, don't be upset, everything is good, everything is fine, you're leaving the camp, you're going to Denmark, you're free, you're free. And a lot of women didn't believe it. They jumped out the windows and they died, and some of them just carried on and they went crazy.
Well, you say you were on the truck. Were there only women there?
My transport, the people that were freed from my camp at that time were only women. I think later they freed some men too, but not at the same time when I was freed. I was in exchange, as I said, for about 200 Jewish prisoners in exchange for 200 German prisoners. And when I was chosen to be one of the exchange prisoners, and I don't know why.
Where did the trucks take you?
They took us to Denmark, and then they made us get off the truck in trucks in Denmark. And they had like tents set up in the fields. They let us get washed there, and they had tables set up with hot food, and they fed us. And we slept in those tents that night. And the next day we got on the ship and went to Sweden.
Were there still Nazis in Denmark at that time?
No. I didn't see any Nazis because we were in the fields where they set the tents up for the prisoners, and they immediately, next morning, shipped us, took us over to the ship that took us to Sweden. I didn't see any Nazis in Denmark. Now, the Danish Red Cross really helped us.
And so you were only there for 2 days?
That's all.
And then you went to Sweden. Could you describe your arrival in Sweden?
Yes. When we got to Sweden, they immediately took us to a place where they disinfected us. They took all our clothes away, and it told us to take showers. And I think I was frightened of showers again because I had enough showers in the camps. But they explained to me, this is a regular shower, don't be afraid. And they literally scrubbed our bodies to try to get the filth off. And they gave us clean underwear and fresh clothing, something to wear, you know. And then they send us to the doctors, different doctors examine different parts of our bodies. And then
side 2, tape 1, interview with Mrs. Lily Wishniewski. Mrs. Wishniewski, can you tell me more about the reception you had in Sweden?
The reception I had in Sweden was wonderful. They were very kind to us.
Were you in a camp or did they send you to private homes?
Well, first I was in a hospital under quarantine for about 6 weeks. They fed us certain kinds of foods to build up our bodies because we were all full of malnutrition and everybody was sick and, you know, skinny, and I don't think anybody was too healthy. So they built us up, and then after that, and they treated us very well, but we weren't allowed to go off the grounds. We had to stay there because some people came down with tuberculosis and they had to be watched and sent to hospitals and be separated from everybody else because that was contagious. And one of my girlfriends came down with tuberculosis, and I shared the bunk with her in Auschwitz and in Ravensburg, and she wound up with tuberculosis, contagious, and they had to send her away.
Was she about your age?
She was about a year or so older.
What, did you know her before the war?
No.
Or did you get friendly in the camp?
We met in the camp. And it was three of us that stayed together. And this one girl had tuberculosis, and she remained in the tuberculosis sanatorium
So three of you were sent to Sweden together?
Yes, we were.
Where did you go from the hospital?
From the hospital, they send us to a farm.
We were saying, from the hospital you were sent.
They sent me to a farm with several other of the survivors, to a town called Solberga.
Okay.
They sent us to a farm for to also be not quarantined as much as so we should be rehabilitated, and we stayed on this farm in a town called Solberga.
Can you spell it? Do you know how?
Yes, Sulberga.
Uh-huh. Was it a large town?
It wasn't a large town. It was a farm town. It didn't have too many houses. It seems to be mainly farmland. But we didn't go anywhere. We just stayed on the farm.
How many people were sent to this farm?
Maybe 25 or 30 the most.
Did you have to do any work there?
No, no work. We just ate and slept and read. I laid out in the sun and we talked. We didn't do anything.
Now, how long did you stay in this farm?
I was there till for about 4 months, and the rest of the time I spent in Stockholm. I was in Stockholm for 5 months.
Did you know anybody in Stockholm?
Well, I met this lady in Stockholm because I wrote a diary in Solberga. I was writing about my life. I was writing a diary to my mother. And one of the girls that was also a survivor found my diary, and she read it, and she liked it. And she sent it to Sweden to a publishing company, and they must have read the diary. And I didn't know it disappeared, and I couldn't find it. I didn't know what happened to it. And the next thing I know, a representative came from Stockholm to take me back to Stockholm, that they liked my diary, and they wanted to translate it into Swedish. So they made me, so I moved to Stockholm to live with this lady who was going to translate the diary into Swedish, and I stayed with her.
What language did you write the diary?
I wrote it in Polish. Then when I went to Sweden, I lived with this lady, and she was very nice to me.
You mean the one in Stockholm?
Yes. I went to Stockholm, okay. I'm sorry.
And how long did you stay in Stockholm with this lady?
I only stayed there 5 months because I have a relative that brought me over to America, and so I came here.
How did this relative find you?
Well, they have a newspaper. I think they went over to America. They asked me, do I have any relatives anywhere? Did I want to go anywhere after the war, you know, when the war was over? And it was by then. I knew I had an aunt that lived here in Norristown, but I didn't know she lived in Norristown. I thought she still lived in New York at the time. So I said I'd like to go to live with my aunt because I knew my parents weren't alive anymore.
Did you try to find out about them?
I found out from a couple of people in the camp that my father was gone.
In which camp?
In Auschwitz. I knew in Auschwitz.
Oh, you knew in Auschwitz already?
I knew about my father. No way, maybe it was in Ravensburg. I think it was Ravensburg. I found out that my father was gone and that my mother died in the Warsaw ghetto. So I didn't want to go back to Poland. I had nobody there, and I never wanted to go back to Poland again.
So do you know if a Jewish organization contacted your aunt?
Yes, it was Hayas. The Hayas found my aunt. She was living in Norristown at the time, and a friend of hers that knew her from New York read her name in the paper and read that a niece of hers was alive and she was looking for her. So my aunt found out where I was through the Hayas and wrote to me in Sweden. And then 5 months later, she brought me over to America.
Was this your father's sister, your mother's sister?
My mother's sister.
Your mother's sister.
Yes.
So you arrived you came to Norristown?
Yes, I came here and went to Norristown to stay with my aunt.
And did you start work or did you go back to school?
I moved to Philadelphia. I moved to a foster home. I didn't stay with my aunt. And I went to school right away. I didn't go to work. I was only 16. And I wanted to go to school, learn how to speak English. And
you speak very well.
Thank you.
And so you stayed in Philadelphia?
Yes.
And you went to school?
Yes,
and
I
you
did.
Stayed in a foster home?
I lived in foster homes.
Was it, were the Jewish homes?
Well, it was all Jewish homes. Through the Association for Jewish Children, placed me in different homes.
Mm-hmm. And could you tell me when you got married?
I got married in 1948, in November.
And you married an American
boy? Yes, I married an American boy.
Now, with your aunt and with the people in the foster home, did you speak English or Yiddish or Polish?
When I first came here, I spoke Polish to my aunt, and she wouldn't let me speak Polish. She only wanted me to speak English. And even though I couldn't speak one word of it, she forced me to speak English, and it was difficult. So the first 4 months, I don't think I said one word in English, but after that I started speaking the fluent English. And while I was going to school, I learned it, and then I couldn't, all of a sudden, I couldn't speak Polish anymore. My throat would close up on me, and something happened to my mind. I just couldn't speak the language.
Does this still continue, or this is the...
I can't speak Polish.
I cannot speak
no.
Polish.
I understand some of it, but it sounds like a foreign language. But this happened to me almost immediately.
So, now you say you got married in
1948
to an American boy.
Yes.
Now, you have two children.
I have two children. I have two grandchildren.
And you're very lucky.
Thank you. Yes, I am.
Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Wisniewski.
Thank you.
Is there anything you would like to add?
Well, the only thing I would like to add is I hope this tape will help future generations from being aware of what happened, and they should try to prevent anything like this happening again to our children, our grandchildren, or anybody. Because it was the most horrible, indescribable thing that it's so difficult to talk about. Because when I first came here, I couldn't talk about it. And when I did try, I saw people's faces, and they looked at me as if I was either a freak of some sort or crazy. So I thought it's better not to talk about it because they won't believe me anyway. So believe me, it happened. And don't let it happen again. That's all I could say.
Well, thank you very much. You were extremely helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you.